In the latest chapter of our collective nightmare, President Donald Trump is rolling out the red carpet for Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman at the White House. It's not an official state visit, because technicalities matter when you're hosting a leader whose track record includes allegations of ordering assassinations, but it sure looks like one. Military bands, black tie dinners, and all the pomp you can muster are on the menu as America extends its hand to a kingdom that never quite made it to pariah status despite some rather glaring human rights issues. This surreal spectacle aims to cement ties with Saudi Arabia in hopes of pulling off a diplomatic hat trick, getting them into Trump's beloved Abraham Accords. Because nothing says peace like selling fighter jets and weapons while discussing normalization with Israel, a country still reeling from terrorist attacks 2 years ago. The prince last graced Washington's corridors of power before journalist Jamal Khashoggi was brutally murdered, an event linked back to him by U.S. intelligence. But hey, bygones are bygones when there are billions in investments and potential treaties dangling in front of us. The guest list for this not-quite-state visit reads like a who's who of corporate America, because why wouldn't they want front-row seats to this geopolitical pantomime? Meanwhile, Trump's First Lady Melania is orchestrating the whole affair with her usual flair for decorum amidst chaos. On top of this diplomatic charade sits a hefty pile of personal financial interests. The Trump Organization has real estate projects in Saudi Arabia. Jared Kushner's investment fund is swimming in Saudi capital, proof that politics and profit make strange yet predictable bedfellows. As we watch these events unfold, we're reminded that foreign policy now resembles reality TV more than ever. Deals hang by threads woven from defense contracts and nuclear program promises, while Palestinian statehood lingers as a distant afterthought. So here we find ourselves again, witnessing history repeat itself with all its absurdity intact, where honor is bestowed upon those who can invest enough cash or wield enough power regardless of past transgressions. Welcome to 2025, where nightmares aren't just dreams. They're our waking reality dressed up for dinner at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Let's talk about the nickel, folks. Yes, the humble 5-cent coin that's apparently on its way to becoming a collector's item rather than legal tender. The U.S. Mint just pressed its last penny because it costs more to make than it's worth. And guess what? The nickel is even worse off. That's right, our beloved nickel costs almost 9 cents to produce. Now I know what you're thinking, oh no, how will I ever pay for my parking meter or tip the barista that extra 5 cents for their latte art skills? These are real issues, people. First world problems at their finest. You see, the nickel is made of copper and nickel, two metals which have become so expensive they might as well be sold as artisanal jewelry. Meanwhile, other countries like New Zealand and Australia ditched their nickels ages ago. But here in America, we're holding on to them like they're family heirlooms. And here's where it gets really rich. There's a pro-penny group funded by a company called Artrazone, which makes zinc products and wants us all to keep using coins that cost more than they're worth. It's like being pro-VHS tapes in 2023. Nostalgic, but completely impractical. But let's not forget the nostalgia factor. Some economists argue that our emotional attachment to these little metal discs could slow down any changes, because nothing says I love you quite like losing money every time you mint a coin. Of course, moving away from cash isn't without its downsides either. It benefits big banks and credit card companies, who charge fees every time we swipe those cards. And guess who ends up paying? Spoiler alert, it's us. In conclusion, while we're busy worrying about whether we should round purchases to the nearest nickel or dime, or if our piggy banks will soon be filled with obsolete currency, the rest of the world is probably laughing at our inability to let go of something that has clearly outlived its usefulness. So next time you find yourself fretting over your dwindling stash of nickels, just remember, somewhere out there is someone dealing with real problems, like finding Wi-Fi on an airplane or deciding between oat milk and almond milk for their morning coffee.
Ah, the sweet symphony of political theater, where the stage is set and the actors play their parts with all the grace of a three-ring circus. Today's episode brings us to the hallowed halls of Congress, where optimism blooms like weeds in a dystopian garden. The lawmakers are positively giddy about their little petition to pry open Pandora's box, otherwise known as the Jeffrey Epstein case files. Representative Thomas Massie from Kentucky is leading this merry band of rebels, dreaming of 100 Republicans breaking ranks with President for Life Donald Trump. Yes, nothing screams unity quite like a fractured party, trying to outdo itself in moral grandstanding. And what better way to do that than by forcing a floor vote on releasing documents that might just make everyone look bad? House Speaker Mike Johnson has already dismissed this as an exercise in futility, since there's already an Oversight Committee investigation spilling more beans than a coffee factory explosion. Yet, here we are, barreling toward Tuesday's vote like lemmings off a cliff. Massey believes he can rally his colleagues by reminding them that Trump's endorsements won't last forever, because apparently preserving one's political future is now synonymous with not protecting pedophiles. Who knew? Meanwhile, Representative R. O'Connor assures us that Trump is sowing seeds for his own lame duck presidency by opposing this noble crusade for transparency. Marjorie Taylor Greene has found herself on Trump's naughty list for siding with those pesky truth seekers. How tragic. But don't worry, Trump has his own plans. He's directing Attorney General Pam Bondi to investigate Epstein's ties to Democratic figures, because nothing says impartial justice like targeting your political enemies while your friends get a free pass. Connor frets that this new probe might conveniently delay the release of those juicy files, a classic move straight from the How to Stall When You're Losing playbook. As we await Tuesday's spectacle and its uncertain sequel in the Senate, House Speaker Johnson remains unfazed, ready to dismiss it all as another political stunt. Because why not? After all, who needs transparency when you have power? And there you have it. Another day in our brave new world where truth is subjective and justice is whatever you can spin it into before dinner time. Enjoy the show. It's bound to be one for the history books, or at least tomorrow's headlines.
Welcome to the Existential Crisis Hour, where we ponder the absurdity of our digital existence, brought to you by an article from CNN titled The Internet Archive. Picture this: a former church in San Francisco now houses the internet's holy grail, a temple not for salvation, but for servers. The pews are occupied not by worshipers, but by racks of data. What was once a place for spiritual enlightenment is now a sanctuary for web pages, a modern-day Library of Alexandria, minus the scrolls and plus a trillion memes. Ah, the Wayback Machine, our time-traveling companion that lets us revisit the halcyon days when websites were just ugly HTML pages and animated GIFs reigned supreme. It's like flipping through an old photo album and cringing at your past self, except it's on the internet and everyone can see it. But let's pause to appreciate the irony here. We're archiving websites, so future generations can learn from our digital debris. Yet isn't it fascinating how we're desperately trying to preserve something as ephemeral as a tweet, as if one day historians will gather around their holographic campfires to discuss ancient Twitter wars with reverence? And what about AI? Our new overlords, sorry, assistants, are blurring reality faster than you can say deepfake. The Internet Archive is even preserving AI-generated content, because nothing says existential crisis like saving ChatGPT's musings on whether pineapple belongs on pizza. In this age where truth is as slippery as a politician's promise, libraries are targeted because they stubbornly cling to facts. Yet here we are, entrusting our collective memory to machines that might one day decide cat videos are humanity's greatest achievement. Meanwhile, Brewster Call and his merry band of librarians and engineers toil away in their cathedral of code. They digitize books page by page while lo-fi beats play in the background, a quirky soundtrack for those who dare defy obsolescence. As statues of staff members stand watch over this digital Eden, a nod to China's terracotta army, we're reminded that perhaps our greatest legacy won't be pyramids or moon landings, but rather an endless loop of archived TikToks. So let us raise a glass, or perhaps an Ethernet cable, to these digital archivists who strive against all odds and bandwidth issues to ensure that when civilization inevitably collapses under its own weight, at least there will be proof that we were here, posting selfies with filters.
In the fevered pursuit of profit, the capitalist machine grinds on, indifferent to the chaos it leaves in its wake. The Federal Aviation Administration's emergency order, an edict born from necessity rather than foresight, mandated a temporary reduction in flights at 40 of the nation's busiest airports. A mere 4% cutback, yet enough to send ripples of disruption through an already strained system. Thousands stranded, plans derailed, lives momentarily paused, all collateral damage in the relentless quest for efficiency and growth. The government shutdown that sparked this mandate serves as a stark reminder of how fragile our infrastructure truly is when tethered to political whims and fiscal brinkmanship. In the end, it is not safety or service that dictates policy, but rather the ceaseless drive to return to normalcy, a euphemism for returning to full-throttle operations where profit margins soar unchecked. As Monday dawns and normal operations resume, one can't help but marvel at society's collective amnesia. The skies will once again fill with metal birds ferrying consumers across great distances, each flight a testament to humanity's boundless capacity for consumption, disguised as progress. Yet beneath this veneer lies an unsettling truth. We are merely cogs in a vast machine hurtling towards an inevitable reckoning. The FAA's decision is but another symptom of a deeper malaise, a system where commerce trumps caution and expediency outweighs endurance. This brief interlude of reduced capacity was never about addressing systemic issues or prioritizing public welfare. It was simply an unavoidable inconvenience, soon forgotten, as profits reclaimed their throne atop capitalism's altar. And so, with engines roaring back to life, society resumes its dance on new. The precipice, blissfully unaware or willfully ignorant of the abyss below. The capitalist fever dream continues unabated, frantic, unyielding, and ultimately unsustainable.